This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I've got a message on our Facebook page from Dave saying, with what happened in France, how can Obama and the U.S. think about letting in even one Syrian? And, of course, this is going to become a much more topical issue in light of what happened in France. And you already have some countries saying that they are rescinding their agreement to take in Syrian refugees, and you can expect more and more of this to be part of the debate in the coming weeks and in the aftermath of what happened in Paris on Friday night. Well, joining me now here in the Showcase studio, Dr. Lisa Nee, cardiologist, and Jermaine Clarno, a social worker. I was at a hearing last week that Senator Mark Kirk held, a subcommittee hearing, in which each of them testified as whistleblowers over the problems that they found over at Heinz. And it's kind of, we were talking off air, I said earlier about how politicians like to talk about education's my number one priority, and you have politicians also talk about we've got to help the veterans, and of course we just had Veterans Day. But these problems that you mentioned, you both mentioned in that subcommittee hearing, they're just so egregious and galling, you can't imagine. It just runs counter to what I think everybody thinks. And Dr. Nee mentioned, you know, you first started surfacing these issues almost 5 years ago.
Correct. 4 years, 8 months.
Well, Doctor, I'd like you to kind of maybe if you could summarize some of the things that you found during your time over at Heinz.
Well, I think, you know, the most important issue is harm to patients, and it was pretty deep-seated in the healthcare delivery there across the board. It was at times negligent, it was times directly harmful, and at times caused death. And for someone who had been involved in healthcare, you know, my entire career, I had never seen anything like that, where you could bring forth these issues and no one wanted to take them on because they already knew about them. It just was, runs counter to everything you stand for as someone who delivers healthcare to patients.
Well, you mentioned that the kind of the, I guess, the first thing you discovered were these tests for cardiac ultrasound.
Correct.
Tests that were just being shoveled into bank boxes.
Yep, the tests were done, and they're charged for, and then they were put in bankers' boxes and hidden somewhere. I'm still to this day not sure where they were kept. They were brought out one by one, and I was instructed to read them. The finding of the boxes was appalling enough, but then to realize that some of these patients had already died as I was pulling up their record was something that I just could not stand by and allow to happen.
So the tests were done. The paperwork just tossed in a box till whenever somebody got around to it?
I think that was how it was handled.
And as you said, and then, I mean, these were people that needed cardiac care.
Right. In order for you to have one of these tests ordered, someone has a suspicion that there may be a problem with your heart to begin with. This is not a screening test. I mean, this was ordered by a primary care physician.
So as a specialist to the specialist kind
right.
of thing to for specialized treatment.
Right. And I think what's more important for the public to understand is in the private sector, these tests are read within a very short period of time. If you're an inpatient in the hospital, they're usually read the same day. If it's an outpatient, they're read within 48 hours. And you're talking about tests that were sitting in boxes for a year.
And, I mean, we're talking about your heart. This is
right.
People, I mean, this is the fundamental, you know, organ in the body. And
well, and many of these patients were waiting for maybe possible clearance, you know, to undergo another surgery. So not only are you delaying a diagnosis of their heart, you're delaying something that they may very well needed much more urgently, certainly within a year's time.
So when you started reporting these issues, what happened?
Well, honestly, when I started reporting the first issue, I really thought it was someone's oversight. Clearly, someone must not have known this was going on, and we were going to rectify it. We were going to take the box, and we were going to stay all night, read the tests, get them done, and notify the patients. And it was horrifying to find out that not only did people know about it, all the way up the chain of command, people knew about it and had allowed this to happen. You know, as a physician, now you know you're in big trouble, because if this has been a collusion among all the people working there, you're not going to be the person that they're going to suddenly welcome with open arms to solve this problem.
And so you faced retaliation.
Harsh retaliation for really just wanting to help patients. And that's my job as a doctor. I'm the patient advocate. I should not be put in that position.
And that retaliation took what kind of forms?
It took many forms. It took forms of not being paid the same amount of other people in the department, regardless of the fact that I had similar or even more training. It was not ever getting a bonus. It was being put in an office where there was flooding. It was then being put in an office where there was asbestos. It was being denied my Family Medical Leave Act when I was pregnant. I mean, the list goes on and on. Those are some of the things I have proof of, as you know. Some of the retaliation that can occur in a workplace, you're not going to have a video of someone retaliating against you. So being alienated within the department and being told that now I have to suffer for trying to stand up for the patient, to me, is retaliation enough above and beyond everything else that went on. Now I have to live with the fact that how am I going to work my way out of this situation and still help patients?
We're going to talk more about this issue with Dr. Lisa Nee and Jermaine Clarno, social worker, and two whistleblowers over at Hines, and some of these very, very serious issues. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and I'm joined here in the Allstate Showcase studio by Dr. Lisa Nee and by Jermaine Clarno. And they're two whistleblowers that found very disgusting things over at Hines, and something that everybody out there ought to know about what's going on. And Jermaine, you're a social worker. Tell me about some of the things that you've seen over at Hines.
I'm a social worker, but I'm also the president of our local union.
Right.
I represent professionals. So not only have I had personal experience of the retaliation, but I hear hundreds of stories of employees that come to me in tears wanting to do something right, but are afraid of losing their jobs.
What kind of things?
Anything from like patient care, what Dr. Nee has talked about, that things aren't being done in the best way, and focusing on the health care of the veteran, and to people just bringing up issues of suggestions and how to do something better. They are retaliated against.
Well, in your testimony, you referred to, you said early in your career, you were exposed to what you called the toxic culture of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because that's just the automatic response to any kind of suggestion or, you know, discovering something?
Oh, right. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was working in mental health, and we had positive tests in the water with Legionnaire's disease, Legionella in the water. And so I had asked in a meeting that said, come and ask questions, if we should notify the veterans that there is positive Legionella in the water and give them a choice whether they want to stay here or they want to go somewhere in the community. And right then, a physician got up, got in my face with beat red, and said, how many Pandora boxes do you want to open? And I said, as many as it takes to protect our veterans. From that day on, my career at the VA was over.
Because of the possibility of Legionnaire's disease, mm-hmm, in the water supply.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? Is it just because it's government and it's a bureaucracy? You know, Dr. Nee, you said there's if this were private business, you know, there would be people held accountable. There would be people going to jail. There would be financial liability issues. But yet it just seems like this is systemic. And, you know, we go through new VA administrators, VA secretaries. Everybody's going to, you know, step up and take accountability, and nothing seems to change. What is it?
Well, I think that's the problem. You know, Shinseki said it himself, that he didn't know that these numbers were being manipulated, the wait times. That message didn't get to him, and I believe him, because by the time the data gets to the VA secretary, it has been whitewashed, it's been twisted, it's been manipulated in such a way that gives a picture that's not really true.
And with those wait times, you also had fraudulent activity going on to kind of cover that up as well.
And nobody has been held accountable for the wait time scandal.
Well, and indeed, there was the report that came out last week that the Department of Veterans Affairs paid out more than $142 million in bonuses to executives and employees for performance in 2014 in the midst of all of this issue of the wait times.
And that brings us to, I like to bring proof and evidence forward. If people want to make an argument that I'm not really clear in what I'm speaking about, I always like to have the evidence before them. And there was a recent investigation at Hines, and it's now on the internet. This is public. And that investigation found that there were violations of a federal law involving fraud. And that physician was paid $28,000 in a retention bonus. So what you can conclude from that is that Hines VA retains criminals. The taxpayer is paying money to retain a criminal. That's the only conclusion you can come to with these two documents.
Part of your testimony also got to the point where you had the inspector general, and then somebody that's above the inspector general.
Three or four now separate investigations.
But they discovered fraudulent billing activity.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And that's their words.
That's their words in the report. They have charts, graphs. I mean, they did a very in-depth statistical analysis of it to prove it.
And they wanted the Department of Justice to come in.
Well, and that's what I was going to lead to, right? Is that there was a recommendation that there is criminal, you know, there should be a criminal investigation being done.
There should be a criminal investigation.
But there wasn't one.
There was not one because the Office of Inspector General said no. And they're the prosecutorial arm of the VHA. And so what you need is Congress to step forward and say, you can't override your own investigations. If there's a preponderance of evidence that says there's criminal activity, the Department of Justice has to get involved and follow through.
So it has to go to an investigation, say, would have to go to the very top of the Inspector General's office for referral to the Department.
That is true. And they prohibit that. It doesn't matter what all these other investigative arms come forward with. The OIG puts a stop to it. And you can't have that.
And you can't have the VA policing the VA.
Well, I was just going to say that's exactly what it sounds like. And here again, part of that systemic culture and cash that exists.
There's a lot of cash. There's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of people not working very hard. And they want protection.
And the OIG, when I first made my disclosures over a year and a half ago, I was being ordered to report to the criminal division of the OIG. And everything that I came forward with has been substantiated by investigations. The final report isn't out yet, but I was told and treated like a criminal, and told that I had to give the names of the people who gave me the secret wait list. And I refused, saying, unless you give these employees complete immunity, you will not know their names and you will not know where they got them from. Now, how are we going to provide health care to our veterans if we can't give people protections? And it's an out for them. If we don't have the person to come forward, and in an atmosphere, in a culture of retaliation, who in their right mind is going to do a career sabotage on themselves?
Jermaine, as I recall, I think it was you in the subcommittee mentioned that you were meeting with a staff member of Senator Mark Kirk when the was it the police were called?
The police showed up in my office. A false police report was made on me.
That's part of the retaliation. Mm-hmm. They'll have the police stop you for things that are just trumped up charges. And because Hines is its own entity, they really do have the oversight over you. They are the federal police. And that's very fearful for a lot of employees. I mean, who's going to stand up and say, you know?
And you have no recourse, because I sent an email to the director saying I was harassed. The police showed up. A false police report was done. I've never gotten a response. And they just sit back and probably laugh, thinking, okay, we're going to continue this. So I don't have the legal consequence, you know, to protect myself from that kind of behavior. I mean, it's very intimidating when you have two Hines police officers coming to your office and coming to arrest you.
And you're talking to a representative of a senator.
Yes.
Dr. Nee, you said with an election year coming up, what you want people to get involved.
I do. I mean, this is really a social justice issue. If you want to put veteran and patient lives at risk for ineptitude and stupidity, and the taxpayer's okay with that, that's one thing. But you're not going to put people's lives at risk for a bounty, meaning the bonuses, because that's felonious. That's criminal. And every person needs to stand up and say, no, that's not a system we want for the men and women who fought for our freedom. I wouldn't want it in private hospital if I was a patient, and they shouldn't have to tolerate that either. They're not second-class citizens. They're the people who fought for us to do the things that we do every day.
Dr. Lisa Nee, thank you very much for joining me this morning. Jermaine Clarnow, thank you as well. I appreciate it, and thanks for hopefully we're getting this kind of information out
thank
to
you.
The public.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back with more right after this.